Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Monday night Big Footy Tiger Cast, the live weekly show. Everyone's favourite time of the week. Hope you're doing very, very well from wherever you're listening and watching from. We do love that we have our overseas viewers as well, which is really good. I was actually just watching some Bali hotel videos before because we'll be in Bali in a couple of months trying to work out if I can be poolside and do a live show. But I'm not sure what the connection will be like over there, so we'll have to suss that out as we go. But it feels like a long time between drinks. From Monday till from Thursday till now. But EJ, welcome, mate. Just
welcome
in the foyer of Groupies Dungeon, I see.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll speak to you off air if you need any help with Bali. My aunt and uncle have been going up there for 35 years. I'm up there quite regularly, so I can get you a couple of good spots out of the way of all the bogans, where you get sounds a great like a fee and some good drinks at good prices. I'll look after you. And now that I'm not at home, and I don't have to have a dodgy background to cover the fact that my den looks like an absolute shit fight, I can actually probably show the.
There it is. Very good. And thank you to everybody who's been sending through their photos of them using the stubby holders as well. Bloody good to see.
Is that the Simon Wallace tuning in tonight? Hello, Simon, if that's the case.
Is it really? Oh, wow. Great man.
Pressure's on.
Yeah, the great man. It's good.
Pressure's on. No, welcome, Simon. Welcome to everybody who's been tuning in. Before we get into... Oh, CB, how are you? I've got to welcome you. How are you, buddy? We got carried away with Bali talk.
I've had a couple of weeks off, so refreshed. Had the bye, you know, had the bye week. And we're back into it. So... yeah, let's get some footy. Let's get some going. Get something going.
That's it. Well, before we get stuck into our game, we'd just like to warm up the room with a little bit of a fun graphic because it's definitely heading into our favour as the weeks get
hang,
on.
Hang on, hang on.
Melbourne. Oh, no. Oh. What?
Look, I'm James Sicily.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry. It's just right near my head.
Now it's time for the North Melbourne 2025 Death Ride chart, which has taken a wonderful turn as North Melbourne notch up their sixth loss of the year, ladder position 17th, and the current draft pick that they hold for us. They're just keeping it nice and warm for us, is pick number 2, and we've got our very own pick number 3 up our sleeve as well. So a very, very good trajectory this is going on. I know it's still early days and a lot of things can change. But they may have lost, is it Curtis? I think it is for potentially 3 weeks, but I dare say they're going to appeal that because it was just a tackle, I suppose, that went wrong. People have appealed and gotten away with less, I guess. But if that suspension stands, CB, the Kangaroos could be in a bit of hurt because he's been one of their better forwards and their backline's already struggling. So to lose some firepower might not help them, especially because they've got the Bombers this week, which is a 50-50.
He's scored multiple games in every game for them so far. So he's been an excellent forward for them. So that and the fact that, like, let's face it, Larkey's an excellent, excellent forward, and he's out of form at the moment. He's not kicking the goals he'd normally kick. So it could be a good time to get the Kangas. So, but we won't get too far ahead of ourselves. It'd be unlike us to get ahead of ourselves, wouldn't it? Let's just
one week at a time. How do you see it? Just before we talk about our games, EJ, the Kangaroos against the Bombers are just an absolute belter of a game coming up. How do you see that one playing out? Are we a chance to extend the losing streak?
Oh, I think we are, definitely. The Kangas are so leaky down back. And as CB pointed out, like, without flowering the gilding the lily or anything, Curtis is in all Australian form. Like, he's been the best small forward in the comp. He's in a losing side and he's kicking multiple goals every week. He's been unbelievable. That is a massive hole for them. So how are they going to score points? Imagine an out-of-form, which Mackay is it? Ben Mackay.
Ben.
An out-of-form Ben Mackay and an out-of-form Larkey against each other. Oh, popcorn gift. Let's just sit down and watch it. And it's a highlight, isn't it? It's a Thursday or a Friday night game this week?
Thursday night.
It's the first game around, yeah.
Oh, lock it in. How good?
That's it. We should start. We should start doing live calls of North Melbourne games, especially the West Coast one. I might consider that a North Melbourne West Coast Death Ride game. There's actually like all jokes aside, there's actually a relatively big month coming up for Richmond West Coast and North Melbourne, with playing each other and playing other games. Like, it's actually going to really shape how that bottom four could look. So I guess from our perspective, this week's is going to be a tricky one, but then you go into a few games that you can potentially win. One thing I want to get your guys' thoughts on first is, if we want to talk about the first seven rounds in totality, it's about a quarter of the season done for us. What ranking out of 10 would you give the start of our season? When you consider where we probably were looking like we were pre-season, what the expectation levels were, how we went last year, all things rolled into one. If you had to give us a ranking out of 10 for the first seven games, what would you give us a ranking, and what have you thought of the first seven games?
That's a really good question. And the answer solidified pretty quickly. I know we haven't won that many games, but I'm giving it a 7 or an 8.
I agree.
We've seen players like Seth cement themselves, and just quietly, he's going, like Nick Watson or whatever, he's going to be a little shithouser for a long time, and I'm here for it. But we've seen what Traynor is. We've seen what Armstrong is. We've seen what Lawler is. So there's green shoots all over the place. There's a middle tier that have stepped up. We've been in game, even though we haven't. Let's be honest. Brisbane took the foot off the gas. But even with them taking the foot off the gas, did you really think you're going to be within 5 goals? So even the losses have got merit. You can see the shape of the game and the way we're trying to play. I see a lot of positives. I hope we can maintain at least the momentum. I don't want to drop off. But, yeah, 7 or an 8. I'll go 8.
I was thinking around about the 7 mark. What I like is the gradual improvement week on week, and it's different players showing different things at different times. I mean, Traynor's been very consistent, so it's Lawler. I mean, even Jonty Fall, look at his 2 weeks in comparison, the growth there. So the team overall is improving week on week, which is really exciting. I know the VFL, we're going to talk about it, was an absolute poo truck. It was an absolute write-off. However, even then, you know, we've won a couple, lost a couple. So overall, holistically as a club, we're going okay. And the big tick has been, I can't say the word, but the big tick has been Ben Serple and his contributions to the club. Can I say it like that, EJ?
The big tick has been the overall fitness of the list.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. The defense rests.
No,
I've been programming my brain all week. I think I'm there.
I'm with you guys. I reckon it's a 7 or 8 as well. Like, we've already won as many games as we did in the entire of last season in our first 7 weeks. So you would like to think that at some point in time, we're going to jag another 1 or 2 along the journey for the rest of this season, hopefully. But yes, I think it's and when you consider how much less experience we've got this year while getting those wins and who we got them against, I think it's been pretty good so far. Seth, you only comment at second halves. Agree, Seth, agree. It's often our game of Taylor two halves, but yeah, we're still learning. We're still getting things right ourselves. But no, it's been good so far. It's been something I didn't expect. I genuinely thought we were going to be 0 and 9, 0 and 10.
And keep in mind, as we've discussed, we've had to back up 3 games in 11 days.
Yep.
Or was it 13 days?
3 games in 11 days.
3 days. So you think of a young list being held up with 8 senior guys, they must have been absolutely knackered by the second half of that game. So the fact they ran it out is really, really promising signs. So keep in mind, that was a very hard little patch of football for our boys against some pretty good opposition. So, yeah, it's good.
All right, we'll push on to the game itself. So the D's knocked us off on Thursday night, 12-11-83 to 9-9-63 by 20 points. Obviously, it was looking a little bit worse until they took Gorn off for about 10 or 15 minutes in that last quarter. And look, I know he's a massive player for them and probably speaks volumes about how in trouble they might be when he finishes up. But I was still impressed and buoyed by the fact that we still didn't roll over. Like, even though they maybe took the foot off, et cetera, we still kept trying to play our game and still were able to generate four or five goals, which was a good sign, because up until that happened, I was worried it was going to be another one or two goal half, which you don't want to see. So the fact we're able to still kick on with it, regardless of the circumstances, I think was good. But the first thing I want to ask about EJ is a tactic that I think went wrong. Kicking to Max Gawn is not exactly the strategy I would go with if I was playing against Melbourne when trying to move the ball down the ground.
No. No, it's not. I think sometimes you just get stuck. We'll get better and we'll work out of it. There's no future in if the D's have got their zone set up, just bombing it down the line. You're better off chipping it short, chipping it short, chipping it short, going backwards five times, as much as we hate it and get bored by it, and trying to switch to the other side of the ground than just bombing to Gawn every time. Yeah, it was a disaster. He had a massive game. I mean, he's got to be in the conversation for being the best ruckman of the 21st century. I don't know what CB's laughing at. But
I'm getting baited. I'm getting baited already by A. He's talking about all of them. He's talking about old Wingsy. I know where he's going with it.
Yeah, so no, it wasn't the smartest. It wasn't the smartest tactic. I think in time we will be smart enough to not fall into it. There were a couple of other things which we'll talk about later, which I thought we were a bit naive in on the weekend, on Thursday, where we got sort of baited by Melbourne and fell for it, and we'll learn.
I think, CB, that some of the reason why we were kicking to Gawn in that first half in particular, I think both teams were actually just set up really well defensively, and we were kind of not giving each other any room to go through the corridor, to mix it up and do whatever. So both teams were actually playing into each other's hands by kicking down the line. It was not pretty, but I suppose it was just the way the game was played.
That's exactly right. It was both teams were very conservative in their ball movement, and there's very heavy defense. There's a lot of numbers pushed back behind the ball as well. So it was a mirrored performance by both teams, to be honest, in that first half. Both teams are playing the same style. So it didn't make for the best of spectacles. But the flip side was it kept us in the game at halftime as well. So,
yeah. It certainly wasn't a spectacle.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. Speaking of the spectacle, EJ, the first half was good. We'll break it down to two halves. What did you make of the first half? We obviously went into halftime only four points behind, and it felt like we were well and truly in it, and it fell away. But for the first half, what were some of the positives and things that you saw from that we could take away from that?
You know what? It's so long ago that I haven't broken the game down into halves. I just made a number of points of positives and negatives.
Oh, go on, you do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, the other point in regards to also like kicking to Gawn all the time, if I want to get a negative out of the way before we talk about the positives, was we really got sucked into the contest when it came to a contested ball situation. Around the ground, we were overcommitting and they were able to spread from that. We'll learn from it, but because Melbourne is such a contested side, we felt like we had to get the bodies in. And they were managing to pull one out. They always managed to spit one out and have an outlet. So if they got the ball, they were right. If we got the ball, we were stuffed because they already had the cover in that second contested possession zone. That was a real – that really stood out to me. And that's just naivety. It's not a long-term problem or anything. But – when they took control, which was also via the 12 or 13 free kicks in a row, they really sucked us into the contest.
Yeah.
Positives. Look, how good was Ross? No, not Ross, Dow. How good was Dow? Like,
he was good.
Seriously, I thought in the first half especially, I thought he was everywhere.
Yeah.
Would you like to give you some stats? Would you like me to give you some Dow stats?
Mate, I've got plenty of stats. I laughed when you sent me your picture of your handwritten notes. I go on to Wheel. I said this to Michaels last week. I go on to Wheelo and I download and sort an Excel spreadsheet, and you send me a photo of a piece of A4 paper with handwritten notes. So you
know,
need,
bro. So you know, I don't need Grok. I don't need AI. I just got a pen, a bit of bloody paper. What? That's all I need.
I'd rather hear the stats from you because you've really put some graft into it.
I put some effort into this. I hope people appreciate the fact I put effort into this.
I do. So hit me up with some Dow stats, please.
Some Dow. Well, fabulous game from young Dow. 28 disposals, 266 metres gained, 2 clearances, 3 tackles, 7 score involvements, 3 intercepts. He went at 75% disposal efficiency and had a whopping 7 contested possessions.
What percentage was your centre bounce attendance?
I had that there and I didn't bother. I couldn't tell. Where was he?
38% centre bounce attendances.
Oh, it's 40 or nothing with me, mate. So
40 or nothing. He was super down. It's a season like he's had this season for me justifies my thoughts of last year that he wasn't made to be a number one or number two midfielder. He was always going to thrive as the third or fourth midfielder. I feel like he's cracking in a bit harder as well. EJ, like he took a really good intercept mark as well in defense and he went back with the flight, showed some good courage, which I know people have had a bit of a knock on him for. But yeah, and he's getting those handballs out to the guys who can use the ball. He's playing to his limitations and I think he's doing it really well. He's essentially playing like his life and career depends on it because it kind of does. But he's ticking all the boxes to ensure he's locked into the 22.
We're not going to talk about him tonight in the stats and what have you. Again, shout out to the guys on the wings, though. Hugo and Trezise and Banks, that outside run, they're showing improvement every week. They're getting better and better and better. And really liking what I'm seeing from those three players as well.
Well, that actually goes to what I was going to reiterate with Dow, and it applies to those three guys as well. What we're starting to see now that they're hitting X amount of games is we're not seeing a horrible drop. They might have an average game, but there's a level of consistency in what they're giving us, and that just brings a level across the team of what we know we're going to deliver. So the peaks and troughs aren't going to be as big when they give us the even performance.
The left-footed wingman, a left-footed wingman is a point of difference, isn't it?
Yep. But with Dow, going back to what I think I've said about a couple of other people the last couple of weeks about not being able to take that first kick, that first handball, that first decision, he really, there was no hesitation. Inside, outside, he made this decision and he stuck to it.
Yeah, I think it's important, isn't it? The first option and take it quickly. And I know sometimes people think that it might look like players maybe get sold into some trouble by doing it, but I think in a lot of ways you're better off trying to go your first option than just holding on and nothing happens anyway. So at least try something instead of trying nothing, I guess is what it comes down to. And Dow's, he's been good. He's had a really good month, to be honest. So I'm really pumped for him. As Julie said, that he got the latitude player of the game as well, which was really good to see. We'll go back to the third quarter as well quickly. Obviously, our momentum got shit on pretty quickly after a couple of very questionable free kicks. Now, we'll never blame a loss on umpires. We can do plenty of better things in the game ourselves. But how on earth was that a free kick against Tim Taranto for spoiling Jack Viney? And he's about to run inside 50 unopposed. We get a goal there. It's back to 4 or 5 points. Whole different ball game. They go down and score. And then a few minutes later, Thompson Dow gets ragdolled off the ball. Doesn't even have it. Spills out to Bailey Fritch. Snaps another goal. And then all of a sudden, the D's get their back up and they start putting out a 240 pressure rating, which was completely off the charts. I felt bad for the young kids.
Unfortunately, it created a run on that and gave them momentum that we couldn't get. But look, you know, it's a terrible decision when Kane Corns actually calls out and says that's actually a shocking decision. So, I'm not gonna waste anyone's time. We all saw it with our own eyes. It was diabolical, and that's all.
You know what the issue with it for me is what has happened is the umpire has guessed, right? Because the umpire was in the center corridor, Taranto was up, and the Melbourne player was on the other side of him. So the Melbourne player's gone down and the umpire has guessed at the contact. That's the thing. And this season, a lot of what the mistakes are in this bloody four umpire system is people guessing. If you don't know, it's play on.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have vision to make a decision. That even bloody rhymes.
Oh, put it on the banner. There you go.
Right. But seriously, that was clearly a guess from the umpire on the reaction of the Melbourne player. That, for me, is the disappointing thing.
And Tiggs has been hot on that for a while, that umpires just sometimes will guess because you can tell when they're blindsided, you can see. And, yeah, they've just anticipated what may or may not have happened instead of calling what did or didn't happen. So, yeah, that was a little bit disappointing. But we sort of then push on to the last quarter, CB, and we start to see some good signs again. And it was good to see us fight it out, to kick a few goals. I actually felt like that we were maybe 2.5-3 minutes away from Melbourne having to put Max Gawn back on before it got any closer.
Yeah, look, I mean, unfortunately, the game was sort of too far beyond us to really reel it in. But the main thing is, as we've said, we fought it out. We're not, even not just this week, we're not dropping our heads now. We're actually fighting games out, which is what we need. When you're educating young blokes, it's always a thing, you never feel like you're out of the contest. And that's what Uze is imparting to these young blokes. You're never out of it, you know, keep going. And, you know, the win against Carlton showed why you don't stop. And, you know, the Suns was the other way. They had all the momentum and we held them out. So some wonderful learnings to come out of it. And then we're coming into a patch now where we've got some winnable games. So they're learning. What will they show us in the next month? That's the really important thing, is they keep improving, that incremental improvement. Now we can actually confidently say there's some winnable games for us coming up, as opposed to 50-50 or where, you know, St. Tigers are going to win, but in reality, we're not really expecting too much. That's kind of how I view it moving forward. So the last quarter was an extension of that. Fight it out, go from there.
So Uze often talks about, you hear it in some of the side notes, about mental mastery. And I think the mental mastery is about staying in the game when it's not going for us. Everyone can fly when you're on top. When it's not going, for us to be in those last quarters when we're getting pumped and bring Melbourne back from 40-something points to 20 points, to bring Brisbane back from 40 or 50 points to 28 points, to stay in the games, that is an amazing sign for a very young side. So when we get into that position against a side that isn't as battle-hardened as a top-four side, even though they might think they're in control in the game, our boys are going to be in the mental space that it's not beyond them, because that's what they're learning now.
Correct.
It's true. Yeah, it's a fair call, that. Let's show some love to some individual players and highlights, anything from players that you thought you liked in the game. First one I want to shout out is Tom Lynch. Three goals, three behinds. I thought Stephen May probably had the better of him early. It's always a good drill between those two, to be honest. But I thought Lynchy was pretty big in that last quarter that helped really get our momentum happening again. And obviously there was a bit of a nervous wait with a foot scan over the last couple of days, but it sounds like he's all okay, which is really, really good. But yeah, I thought that was a really good game from him. And I'm actually just more wrapped for him that he's been able to put together six games so far this season. Like, I know we've said that's been a big part of him getting back on the park and helping us out. So yeah, I just thought Lynchy deserved a bit of a pat on the back for the three goals that he got. And yeah, he kind of helped get us, I won't say back into the game, but he kept momentum going our way in the last quarter.
Mate, towering figure. You know, he had 13 disposals, 7 marks, 2 of them were contested, 1 tackle, 1 clearance, which, yeah, I was surprised on. You know, 7 score involvements and 6 contested possessions. So he played, for a big guy, he played an excellent, excellent game. And the reality is he kicked 3-3, but he probably could have kicked 5-1.
he could have kicked 6-0.
Could have.
If Miani had blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Why be so negative, CB?
Lord of the Wings, he's just in my space.
Any players you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I will, but I'll just a quick note on Lynch. After that first goal, when he got into the pulling the jumpers and stuff like that, how good was it to see the first Richmond person in there was Lawler? Like, he got right in between. He's like, get the bloody hell out of Lynch's way. Like, I thought that was grouse.
Yeah, Lawler loves a scuffle. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. From the young kid, though, when he stand up. Look, I know he made a couple of really big mistakes on the weekend, but I thought Vlosten was great again.
Well, he had one score involvement that I thought, where he laced a bloke out, but yeah.
Okay, I'm not going into come on man territory here, but how can that kick, which has gone 7 or 8 metres, how can the umpire blow a mark? Seriously. Seriously. How? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you could see he was trying to call it too. He was trying to say, no, it's not 15, play on, but the umpire was having none of it.
But he was really good again, and he's been a fantastic father figure for the group down back.
Speaking of the group down back, CB, Luke Traynor, I thought was very, very good again. 16 disposals, 9 marks, 1 tackle, 227 metres gained. I know we say it every week, and it's at the risk of sounding like a broken record, but Jeezy looks settled and calm at AFL level. It's actually, like, I know he had that 4-minute game time last week, but I was rapt for him to get a full game and to play at that level again.
I might get JFK'd when I'm driving my work vehicle around town when I say this next comment, but he's actually putting a better season together than Lawler for consistency and for output.
Yeah, I think that's a product of position though. If you look at the ball's down the back end more, he's getting more. Blah, blah, blah. If you look at the actual AFL ratings and impact on the games, Lawler's having a bigger impact with less time. When the ball starts to get down our end, look out.
What it shows, we've got two young blokes there that are both risk takers. They're not conservative footballers. They're prepared. Traynor and Lawler are both prepared to bite off a bit and take a bit on, which is just unbelievable. Like, yeah, two unbelievable seven weeks of footy from both these guys. And yeah, couldn't be happier. But Traynor, I tell you now, he's right up there. He's right up there.
I tell you what's good about that, though, CB, as well, is they're prepared to take the risks, but if it doesn't come off, they don't drop their head and go back into their shell. They keep trying and they keep doing the same thing until it comes off. And I think that's a really good sign of good footy IQ, good maturity, and good backing from the coaches to give them the license to do that. I think it's important they're able to learn and make those mistakes. But, yeah, I'm loving what he's doing. And good call for people in chat about the rising star. Not that it's the be-all and end-all, but, geez, he's got to be close.
A's baiting me again on Taru. I'm just going to say this. I put the stats up of Smiley versus Taru. They've both played 3 games each, and I've put up the average disposals and their numbers for the...
One's a midfielder and one's not, CB. Give me a spell.
What's that?
One's a midfielder and one's not. Give me a spell. That's like comparing... It's like comparing Arnold Schwarzenegger to Danny DeVito.
Twin. I'm not the guy... I'm not the guy on the Richmond Forum squirting all about the place about Taru, mate. It's not me. I'm just giving a reality check to old Lord of the Rings who can spot him at 14, apparently. So, anyway.
Campbell Gray, EJ, I thought was very unlucky to be subbed off, if I'm being totally honest. I personally probably would have subbed off one of the small forwards because all four had an absolute stinker. But I thought Campbell Gray looked like he belonged at the level. He didn't look out of place. He didn't think, oh, shit. You can tell he's fresh into it. He did good. Nice one-handed mark. Looked composed. I think he'll get another crack at some stage.
Yeah, no, very assured. It's fantastic. One of the great all-time jumper presentation speeches from Marlon Pickett as well. It was good to see him down in the rooms. So that was fantastic. But no, he looked amazing. I was actually really surprised that they had a tall as a sub to start with. So why Brown was a sub, I'll never know.
Do you reckon it was a game time minutes thing on the back of the 3 games in 11 days?
Yeah, you know what? Quite possibly, because we did the same to Traynor, didn't we? So quite possibly.
The only thing that makes sense, because nothing else makes sense. A player
But as you said, the Smalls were not exactly lighting the world on fire. Why you wouldn't change the mix in that regard? Yeah, I don't know why. But anyway, he's had a taste and he doesn't look out of place.
Correct.
And the beauty is he can play either end too. He can actually, because he was drafted, we picked him up while he was playing forward for Essendon, so he can actually play at both ends, which is interesting too. We'll talk about the small forwards quickly before we push on, but unfortunately for the small forward brigade, they all had a bit of a nightmare at the same time, which doesn't often happen, and I'm assuming this is because of just pure exhaustion from the 3 games in 11 days, if I'm having to take a guess at something. But how much of a huge impact does it have when your small forwards don't fire? Like, there's such a pivotal part to working up and down the ground, to helping out in defence, to helping with transition football forward. Like, they just mean so much to the team, and to have them all not firing would just hurt us massively.
Yeah. But this is what we're in for the next couple of years, isn't it? High-low performance. Like, you know, Seth's been good. Then he had a down game, up game, down game. So by law of averages, he's going to be on against the Hawks. You know? Yep. And Morris Rioli Jr. just looked gassed. That he looked knackered from halfway through the second. He couldn't run from the third quarter. So, I think he'll benefit from a couple of extra days off, I think.
Yeah, we're going to go straight into the, what are we calling it now? The fitness report, wellness report, whatever it is, other than the other word that EJ's banned us all from saying, which is fair enough too. But first of all, Johnny,
I had to abuse someone with a meme on Twitter tonight.
I saw that. I did see that. Don't make me tap the sign.
That's what I should have done instead of using the one with the F-bomb in it. Yeah. Very good.
But Juddy Clark, I know he's not on this list, but it was more just a shout-out that he did get through the VFL, which was really, really good. I think he only had the 4 or 5 disposals. He was on the wing, so he's going to be better off for the run in the legs. He'll obviously go around again this week. Samson Ryan, foot 1 to 2 weeks, so he's got a bit of plantar fasciitis or whatever they call it these days. McKelty LaFau's one of the interesting ones, now 3 to 5 weeks away, which is really cool. Got through training last week, and he's in better shape now. Sound like he had a pretty big training load as well. So he'll be now down for 3 to 5 weeks at this point in time. Tyler Young, 4 to 6 weeks, so he's not far behind McKelty, progressing really well. Started training this week without a non-contact hat, so he'll have a full train next few weeks and hopefully he can get a body of work and we can see what he's like to play. Harry Armstrong, hamstring, still 9 to 11 weeks. It sounds like they're actually a bit buoyed about the other stuff he's able to do while not running. Mm. So maybe he's working on some upper body strength and things like that as well. Dion Prestia, it's gone backwards, if I'm being totally honest, and I still won't be shocked if there's an announcement of some type in the coming weeks. And Taj Houghton and Josh Gibkiss, ACLs, TBC. But Taj and Josh are going in leaps and bounds as well, which is always good to hear. Taj progressing well and will hopefully have a time frame on him in the next week or two. Josh Gibkiss progressing as well, but again, hopefully in the next week or two, we'll have an actual time frame. So we'll see them on the track doing more footy drills. So a lot of positive signs there. And it's amazing how many players we're going to start getting back over the next 6-7 weeks. But going through some of the guys who are back soon, McKelty LaFau just quickly, do we see him, like, is he a big priority, a big need to get back to the AFL side? What are your thoughts on him? And the same for Tyler Young. What are you both thinking about those two?
Well, it's just exciting to have a nearing date. Like, you know, by mid-year, they'll be back playing football in some capacity, barring any setbacks. So, LaFau, I mean, the reality is, like, we're going to get him back, but they're going to need so much time in the VFL before they're even considered for AFL selection. But it's just going to be exciting to have those guys back in the VFL program and helping the younger bodies and guiding. It's could not be happier with how they've been managed this year compared to last year.
Yeah. I think if we're being honest, with the riches that we now have down back, Tyler Young is probably really good depth, whereas I can see once he gets a few games under his belt, the physicality of McKelty could be really useful at a senior level.
Yeah, I think McKelty will be... I'm looking forward to seeing him play alongside Tom Lynch as a second forward. I think that's going to be really exciting to see him bash and crash and do his thing. Tyler Young, I think, is... Yeah, he's going to be... He's going to find it hard to break back in, I think, even though he wasn't doing much wrong, but just with the other players we've picked up and all that kind of stuff. But if nothing else, our VFL team's going to be going along fairly nicely with people coming back, more competition for spots. That's all positive signs. But the Taj Houghton one, can't wait until we see a time frame on that. Jesus.
So the conversation that's tonight's not the program for it, so you won't clog up too much time with it. But the debate that's in my head, and EJ will confirm, I have a lot of voices in my head, but the debate in my head this week, I know we're talking about Harley Reid, but looking at what our list needs are, rather than our wants and needs, we should be talking to Oscar Allen, not Harley Reid, because we're going to have a gap in the forwards while Fall and Sims and Armstrong develop. Lynch has got one more year after it at best. So we need someone to come in that interim that's experienced and is a leader that could fill a gap. And I think we need Oscar Allen more so than we would need a Harley Reid, because we'll have the draft picks to bring in another two high-end Lawler-type kids. That's why I say what I say. But tonight's not the show, but I think...
I've said what I said.
What's that?
I've said what I said.
Said what I said. So, yeah. I think that's something down the line that we need. We could probably have a good debate about on the boards somewhere.
It's an interesting one, and I think we'll definitely do something separate on that topic, because there's a whole raft of things that are up for consideration in that space with draftees and positions we've got to fill and things like that. But we'll jump into the VFL quickly. Why, I'm not sure. It was a terrible affair. I was out there, Casey Fields, blowing a gale. It was terrible. Melbourne 21-17, 143, defeated Richmond 3-7-25. Look, there's not much to report home on that. I mean, Jasper Olga looked okay. I thought, again, he had 11 disposals, couple of marks, tackle, three behinds, though. Like, if he had converted some of those goals, it makes it a bit of a different story. And Josh Smiley led the way for us with disposal with 24 touches, 9 kicks, 15 handballs, 5 marks, 3 tackles, 5 clearances. So they were probably the two standout players if you had to sort of pick standout players. But the unfortunate thing is, guys, is I don't think anyone from that game is putting their hand up to come back in anytime soon this week. And if we want to talk about Smiley in particular quickly, I still reckon he's about another week or two away in the VFL, just from a match fitness perspective. Even though he played 4 quarters, I reckon his game time might have been at like 65, 70%. And you probably need that a little bit higher, up at around the 80% mark. No, Sims didn't play. I think he was ill. He was ill. That's why he didn't play. But, yeah, any other thoughts on the VFL, and maybe more particular about when we might see the likes of Smiley and Elgar and players like that come in?
Nearest to the bin.
I had relatives. I didn't see the VFL this week.
I'm going to play nearest to the pin. I'm going to say that Smiley will debut against West Coast Eagles. I think he's got one more game in the VFL, then they're going to bring him in.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it'll be this week. I've thought it's either going to be in the North Melbourne or West Coast game as well.
It's close.
It feels like an okay time. As long as he keeps putting up numbers in the fitness space builds and things like that, like, you want to make sure that we're still ticking all those boxes. But,
Confirming he's going to debut before Tarou, yeah?
I hope so, for your sake and everyone else's sake. I hope so, because otherwise it's going to come back a million mile an hour. And your man McAuliffe did okay as well, EJ. I wouldn't mind seeing McAuliffe in soon too.
Oh, well, as I said, I didn't see the VFL on the weekend, but from the back and forths I saw on Twitter, he didn't have the greatest game, apparently. So I'll leave
Not
that
many of them did, but even a sub, he might be I know we don't like him as sub because we got a bit annoyed at that last year, but yeah, he could be an option as well potentially. Yeah, I know. I think they'll appeal that Tarou suspension just quietly, but yeah, at the moment it's not looking good for him.
RFC Centre just raised a point on Jack Ross. I'll give you some numbers on Jack Ross's game on Thursday night. Jack Ross had 24 disposals, 350 metres gained, 4 clearances, 6 inside 50s, 8 score involvements, 3 intercept possessions, and 9 contested possessions. So I don't know what more he's got to do to hold his spot if you're knocking him, RFC. I reckon he had a pretty handy game.
Well, I will say that the one knock on him was his disposal efficiency was below 60%.
Yeah.
That if you had all the stats, you would have that. But anyway.
I'm analog, mate, not digital.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, now with the VFL report out of the way, it's now time for...
Oh, man.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Is it really far out? Not ready. I've got to go back to the other thing. Well, I know that, first of all, I know that whatever happened this week, it didn't break the top five. So the top five isn't changing. We know this much.
So these are just some honourable mentions.
Oh, no, well, they're come on mans of the week. They just didn't make the top five.
Okay.
Where are we?
I'll have had the umps for my come on man.
Third quarter. Go on then?
Come on, man.
For the third, yeah, well, fair. Horrible stuff that third quarter.
Just take your time, Edge. Yeah. Feel good, mate. Take your time.
I will. Yeah, here it is. Right. Yes. First of all, the MRO. I understand that what we're doing is we are protecting players from going out of their way to maliciously hurt each other in non-football contests. So in what aspect, in what planet, especially after Danger got off last year, do we give 3 weeks for Curtis for making a tackle from behind?
Come on, man.
How?
Well,
no, yeah. I'm sorry. It's going to be upheld. It's going to be upheld. He's going to be suspended. This leads to, but the other suspension was the 4 weeks for Tauru or Tauru, whatever you say his name is. That's a joke. I've seen the video. They have to appeal that with all their might. That's a disgrace. Which leads me to, though, the point here, specifically to the Curtis tackle. Where in the hell is the AFLPA? Now, we know that Dangerfield stepped down as president, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know who the new president is. I think it might be Darcy Moore, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Ellen DeGeneres, yes.
No, it's Keira Knight. Come on, get with it. The thing is here, with the suspension of 3 weeks for that tackle, that is when the Players Association should be standing up to the game and saying, no, this is bullshit. That is part of the game. You need to protect our players from rubbish suspensions. We encourage you rubbing out people for doing the wrong thing. He has made a genuine tackle. The only reason that suspension is the player he tackled got his knees caught in the turf and spat forward and sin, was it? Head hit the ground, right? It's unlucky, but there are accidents in football. The lack of the Players Association standing up here and showing some nuts is absolutely disgraceful.
Come on, man.
And lastly, Kane Corns with his vociferous defence of bloody Horn Francis. Mate, Horn Francis carried on like an absolute pork chop. He's got his head up his own ass. He thinks his shit doesn't stink. If Harley Reid or if Tim Taranto had have behaved the way that Horn Francis did on the weekend, we'd still be hearing about it now. Your defence is unwarranted. Stop it. You're embarrassing yourself.
Come on, man.
But none of them made top five.
Can I do a come on, man? 100%. James Racing's bang on. Now, Mansell deserves time. He did the wrong thing pushing that bloke into a pack. The Brisbane Lions player has shoved Darcy Moore into a pack, and they're saying it's an earache, but somehow he's got a fractured jaw, or like they're just talking shit. They're making it up as they go. Honestly, rules on the
come on, man.
Thank you.
Yep, no, yeah, pleasure. Love it.
That's a doozy, that one. Yeah, there's something a bit more to that injury. But anyway, we'll...
Yes, correct.
We'll never get that one overturned.
If I had a tinfoil hat, I'd stick it on my head right now and go, exactly friggin' right. They're protecting that. To justify the situation, they're giving us a line of bullshit. It wasn't just a little earache from a push. He's actually copped an injury worse than anticipated. And
allegedly.
Bullshit. I'm not going to say allegedly. It just happened. I know it because I just know.
And there is a strong chance he misses this week as well.
100%. And old mate gets to still play.
Yes.
Yeah, crazy. Exactly right.
Crazy shit. And that's what frustrates supporters is no one knows, what on earth's going on.
One more, come on, man. How does Patrick Dangerfield not get fined for staging?
Because he's been staging his whole career.
Come on, man.
Now, okay, I'm actually going to say some really, really positive things about Patrick Dangerfield here, right?
Come on, man.
He is one of the fiercest footballers. His attack is brutal. He is insanely physical. He smacks the contest at speed. He's a great overhead mark for his size. He never gives up. To have all of those qualities and stage like a bitch on such a regular basis is unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's a great come on.
Did anything ever come of it?
He's 100 kilos. He's 100 kilos, built like a brick shit house, but falls over at the touch of a leaf, you know? Come on.
That reminds me of Charlie Dixon. He did that quite a lot too. One of the biggest blokes out there, and we went down with getting hit with a wet lettuce leaf.
So did Dylan Grimes.
He did. Dixon was bigger than Grimes, but Grimes did milk it a little bit. All right, well, we've got a massive game coming up this week against the Hawks. I'm a little bit scared about this one, if I'm being totally honest. The Hawks are one of the better teams in the comp, and they're also celebrating their 100-year anniversary, which gives them a bit of extra motivation. Maybe it backfires like the Tom Hafey motivation did for us. Who knows? But they are in good form after knocking off West Coast Eagles. We'll talk about the changes first. I think the only one that might happen is I think Campbell Gray is going to be really unlucky and he might miss out for Noel Bolter. And this is on the assumption that based on, I think it was John Ralph, I think it was that tweeted it today, that Tom Lynch has gotten through all okay scan-wise and everything like that. And it seems like he'll play. Because I did have a slight train of thought that if Lynch was in some way questionable, that maybe we'd rest him for this game and save him for the next two games that were a better chance of winning. But I also think that continuity is a big thing for Tom Lynch. And if he's right to go, he's right to go. And I think we'll play him no matter what.
Yep.
I think it is that simple. I think it's just literally Gray out, Bolter in. If they were dissatisfied with Morris Riley Jr., maybe Alga comes in, but I don't think Alga did too much in the resis to force a change there on the weekend. I just think they're going to lock in with the team they've got, and I just think, one change.
Yeah. The only other way someone else comes in, EJ, is if they train well this week. It's not because of VFL form. It'll be they stood out at training, which I don't think happens these days.
Yeah, well, I don't think that the VFL, there were any red lights flashing to say, pick me, pick me, pick me, were there. So, it's going to be...
The interesting one could be the sub this week. So if we've rested Brown, so he was a bit sore, so who will be the sub this week? Could be the interesting thing for us.
Yeah, Loston, definitely.
Loston, definitely.
Let's rest
another Bolter.
Yes, let's bring Boulder back from a week off and stick him in the subs vest.
Do you reckon the sub could end up being a small four? Like, do we think that were we too small, if that's such a thing with the four smalls, or would you persist with the four smalls and back them in to turn it around and have someone else's sub?
Okay, so who we got down back for the Hawks? We've got Sicily,
So they've got Barras, Sicily, Battle, Impey, Weddle. Hardwick can play forward as well, but he also can play defence.
Yeah, so they're quite tall, aren't they?
So yeah.
I'd actually stick with maybe going small and keep it dirty.
Because you would assume that Barras will probably go to Lynch, Battle will probably go to Jonty Fall. Sicily, I'm even wondering if he plays forward because I don't think there's a genuine third tall matchup for us potentially at this stage. Or he's going to play loose and try and cut everything off.
Question for you. Tom Brown last year finished the second half of the year playing forward and was kicking goals every game. Could you take out a small like Morris Riola Jr. and put Brown into the forward line to change the mix a little bit and then bring someone in from the VFL?
Nah.
It's so hard. Like, I'm seeing a lot of comments about Morris coming out, but I'm feeling like that I think it's difficult to point the finger at one of the small forwards because they were all bad.
Correct.
And if he was the only one that was bad, fair play. But you've got to remember, you look back a week further and he was almost best on ground for us against Gold Coast.
Correct.
So it's like, I don't know if we should be looking too much into all four of them being off at once and just being cooked. I would see how it goes for another week. But to answer part of your question, CB, wouldn't mind seeing Brown get rolled up the ground a little bit. I just feel like we're just missing that drive off a half back, but I don't know whether he's going to do that or not, but whether he maybe plays wing or high half forward just to get his 60-meter kicks inside 50 because he's got a good kick on him. But I just feel like we're missing out on it at the moment a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think the Hawks have some outs as well. I think someone said Eamon was out, which is something...
And Scrimshaw, both with concussion.
I read somewhere earlier, is Lloyd Meek out or is he...
Oh, I don't know. He had a really good game on the weekend. If he's out, it's news to me. But the other two both were out during the game on the weekend and will miss.
Yeah, during the game. Yeah. So they'll definitely be out. But where's the game won and lost? I mean, the Hawks, obviously quite a number of years ahead of their resurgence than what we are. But they've got some good ball winners across the grounds. Newcomb's had a reasonably good year. Warple goes all right in the middle. Amon missing is actually a huge out. But for me, it's just how flexible they are. Like, Sicily can just go forward or back. Hardwick can go forward or back. And they cause a lot of headaches when they do that too.
I think we're going to struggle to cover their outside spread. When we turn it over, that thing is going to come back so fast and hard. Good luck to the defense covering that. That's what
and
I think.
And they've also got a really good mix of high half forwards.
Yep.
So you've got your Dylan Moores and your Ginnivans and players like that. Your McDonalds, like their high half forward rotation is as good as there is in the AFL. You know, like we all know that what Marbs brings, we all know that, you know, we could put Bolter on him and he'd go to water because that's what Marbs does under pressure. But once the ball hits the ground on the Hawks forward line, I think we're in a bit of trouble.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I almost feel like our tall defenders have a really favourable matchup on both Gunston and Chole.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Miller and Bolter will do perfectly fine against those two. I'm not sure which way I would have them lining up, but I think I would feel comfortable with both of them. But like you said, it's when Dylan Moore gets around it, when Ginnivan, Watson, Morrison, like they've got, some good smaller players that are going to cause us trouble. And for the love of God, if Nick Watson picks up the ball and turns around, he's going to go down like this. So maybe either don't tackle him or tackle him around his waist. Just please don't give him a high free kick.
Tackle him around his ankles, mate. The body will drop and by the end of it, you'll be in his hips.
100%.
I think...
Put Boulder on Chole and you won't see him all game.
Yeah, correct. I would have Miller. I'd have Miller for Gunston.
Yep.
And I would have Bolter on Chole, 100%. Yep.
Gunston's been in some good form the last couple of weeks as well, to be honest. He's kind of wound back the clock a little bit. So we definitely don't want to take him lightly in that sense. What about the midfield battle? I mean, I feel comfortable against their tall forwards. Their small forwards might trouble us, but midfield, they've got... I mean, I'm assuming that Meek's playing. I haven't read otherwise other than one comment that could have been a troll. Jai Newcomb, Huss-Waite was in there last week. I'm not sure. I mean, he did okay. I'm not sure if he'll hold his spot or not. James Warple. They're obviously missing Connor Nash, who was a big one that went through there as well. But it's another one of those games that we just need. We need Taranto, Hopper, Dow, whoever else is in there. They've got to just go for 3.5, 4 quarters. If they slack off again, we'll just get outworked.
Yep. Yep. I actually think with Nash out, Nash is a massive out for them because he's physical and he's actually really big. Like, he's crip size. He's 195. He's a big boy. That is a massive out for Hawthorn, and actually it levels up the middle quite a bit.
And Will Day out too is a big out, obviously, for them too.
100%.
Just have a look. Even, but like I said, I really love, to be honest, what's his name? Oh, I've lost him.
Oh, you sound like a Melbourne supporter. John, number 23.
John Newcomb's just a gun.
Oh, Dumbo.
I absolutely love John. If I could pick anyone out of their team, I'd take John Newcomb in a heartbeat, mate. He's just,
He gets to every single contest, as does Warple. Like, Warple's probably not a sexier player as what a Newcomb is in terms of how he uses it and things like that, but just gets to every contest. But I think what was interesting...
Any chance we're going to cover Impey and not have him just run off the half back line and just tear us a new ball?
And Weddle. Because if you cover one, the other one will get off the leash, and Weddle's got some serious wheels. And this is where you want to see people like Mansell and Seth Campbell and Morris do a good job on that front. And that's why it's so imperative that our small forwards are working hard to stop the setting up of the defensive play from those type of plays. And then we've got to hurt him the other way too.
I'll put Campbell on Impey.
Campbell on Impey?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got the jets to absolutely really hurt him. But then when he goes off him, there's no way Impey can go with him. There's an imbalance there that is bigger than if we concentrate on Weddle, I reckon.
I like RFC Centre's suggestion. I'd have Mansell on him.
I'm trying to work out, is Impey more inclined to get sucked into some physicality? Like if Mansell's roughing him up and stuck in.
Impey's soft. He's not going to get into physicality. He could get
off his game.
He could get thrown off by it, but he's not going to get sucked into it.
Yeah, okay. I probably
would. Reckon Gideon would check under his bed for Mansell when he was playing for Collingwood, and Mansell just absolutely nailed his head into the turf that time. It was at that point I knew I was in love with Mansell when I saw him do that to Gideon.
Yeah, I agree with that. I put Mansell on Weddle because that is a physical versus physical matchup, and the speed is where Campbell can hurt Impey.
Their defenders worry me a little bit as well with how flexible and versatile Barras and Battle are with intercept marking. And then you add Sicily. Like I said, we've got, you know, you've got Lynch down there and Jonty Fall who's going to have to be accountable. But who else takes the third? If Battle, Barras and Sicily all play defense, who covers the other one? We're almost a tall short in that sense. That's where like a Jacob Bauer might be handy, or even a Jacob Blight would be handy to have up there to really even the contest out from a marking perspective.
Well, the problem we've got, Jonty's still learning, and I think, you know, if four plays on Sicily, he'll get touched up horrendously. If he takes Josh Battle, he's just got to try and break even. I don't know. I don't know. It's a tough one. Yeah, Lawler on Sicily would be handy.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lawler, again, found himself in open space. He's just a clever footballer. He gets away and the opposition don't notice until it's happened. He's a slippery. He's a big boy, but he's slippery. He gets away and they don't pick it up. So Sicily would be a good match for him because Sicily is a very clever footballer.
JP throwing out a curveball, which I don't mind. Gray, Ford, and McIntosh out. So Gray would solve the extra tall problem up forward, but then we lose a potential tagger in Camden McIntosh.
I think what you would see if Gray went forward would be Steely Green out. I don't think they're going to give McIntosh up because of the versatility that he brings at the moment.
Yeah. Fair call. Yep. Well, and truthfully, I actually wouldn't be against Gray playing that forward role. I really think that it's important that we get those matchups right, because if we don't, then they're going to have an extra back there that's just going to tear us to shreds.
I've just been dumbfounded by a comment on the sides. I think it might be from Hawk Tim. I'm not sure. I'm not going to scroll up. Lawler and Sicily are the same height.
Really?
Tell me it's not true.
Lawler's a big dude.
That stuns me. Really? Oh, I want to go to Google. I really want to go to Google. I know Sicily isn't a big. I know Sicily isn't big, but I still thought he would have had Lawler covered.
Wow! There you go.
Both 188. There you go.
Well, it could be a matchup to look out for. Well, how else? I mean, yeah, there's not much else to really speak about other than margins. But is there any other ways you think we can beat them? I think it's going to have to be a 3.5 quarter effort minimum. I think our biggest chances if Hawthorn take us easy as well. They're a well drilled and a very clean side. But if they play a little bit like they did last week, and we play like we did against Gold Coast, it could make things very interesting.
I think our best hope is going forward is to go forward with dirty ball, keep it out of the air, keep it out of Barass and the guy from St Kilda, Barass and Battles, keep it out of Barass and Battles' filthy mitts, keep it on the ground and let our smalls go to work is our best chance of success.
I'm just saying the bookies are clearly confident that we can cause an upset here, because we're out to $9.50 and the Hawks at $1.06. Now, if that's not an excuse to stick at least $1,000 on Richmond, then what are you doing?
but please, children, gamble responsibly.
Maybe don't take that bet either, I wouldn't have thought. Oh, gosh. Well, anyway, what are the final tips, including margins for this one? Let us know in chat as well. What are you thinking? How much are we going to win by or lose by? EJ, you can go first.
Well, I'm going to tip against Richmond because two times out of six, it's proven that we win when I tip against us. So Hawks by 23.
I like this reverse psychology. I like it. CB?
Well, I still have my balls attached to my body as opposed to other people who clearly put them in a jar and put them inside their monitor. Richmond by 15 points. In an upset, and I'm going to have money on us because that's what I do. I'm bald, senseless, and stupid.
That's why you're still working.
I think Hawthorn will get us by about 25 or 30 points, but it's the Michaels household showdown, so I'd be very, very thrilled if we're able to get over the line. It's turned into a bit of an interesting one for me on the home front because the eldest is technically a Richmond supporter, so I claimed him very early on because we beat them in a game prior to him being born. But since our form shifted, he's like, oh, no, I want to wear my Hawthorn jumper. I'm like, hang on. No, mate, you're wearing your Richmond jumper. We need a win just to get him back on side, I reckon. But, no, it's going to be a big game. And like I said, with the 100-year anniversary as well, they've got a lot more to play for. But, you know, confidence in young teams can be interesting. We're coming off a 9-day break this time, I think it is. So everyone should be well and truly refreshed. Fingers crossed we can just have a red hot crack for at least 3.5, 4 quarters and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So thank you everybody for tuning in tonight from wherever you are around the country. Very much appreciated. Make sure you follow us on all the socials. And we'll be back on next Monday for the live show. We're going to do our vote straight after this, so keep an eye out for that one tomorrow. And I'm trying to finalise the behind frenemy lines to happen on. I think it's going to happen on Thursday or Friday night with some Hawthorn, one of the Hawthorn podcasts. So keep an eye out for that as well. But thanks again, gents, for jumping on tonight. Appreciate it. And until next week, go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Free money. Free money. Do it.